Being recorded. Okay, so just before we begin, tomorrow we have a bris in the Kehillah 8:15 ish, 8:20. So I don't think I'm going to manage to say shir tomorrow. I don't think we'll have a shir tomorrow. Maybe we can push it off to Thursday. Check your emails. We'll be in touch. At least Baruch Hashem for Simchas.
Thursday, I won't be able to be here.
All right. Okay.
I have stuff in the morning.
Okay, we'll see. Okay, we're up to the Mishnah in Daf Chof Amud Aleph. Chof Amud Beis, excuse me. Umoitzi lemelchemes harashus al pi bezdin shel shivin ve'echad. We are continuing to learn the halachas of the melech. Now, we know that a melech, part of his responsibility in leading Klal Yisrael is to lead them to war. But it's very important to point out, and we just learned about this on Shabbos, as we know, there are two types of milchamos that Klal Yisrael can wage. What we call milchames mitzvah and milchames rishus. What's the difference? Milchames mitzvah is when there is an absolute chiyuv to go to war, for example, to kill out the seven nations or Amalek, etc., etc. As opposed to a milchames rishus, which is not a mitzvah, but the king, in his decision, in his opinion, decides that this is what's necessary, for example, to conquer more land or to take revenge for a particular nation, but not necessarily one of the Sheva or Amamin. So what's the difference between the two? So there are several distances, but several differences. What's neged to us is, does the melech need to consult with the Bezdin HaGadol, meaning the 71-man Bezdin, before leading Klal Yisrael to war? And the answer is, milchemes mitzvah, he does not. If there's land which is being occupied by the seven nations or Amalek, the king can announce one day, right, we're going to war. No questions asked, and he does not need to get the green light from the Bezdin HaGadol. Masha Ein Kein, if he's going to Milchemes Rishus, which means that he has decided in his personal opinion that we'd like to conquer some more land or expand the borders, whatever it may be, then that's what our mission is talking about.
Who decides if it's a Rishus or a Milchemes Mitzvah?
So a mitzvah is against the seven nations or Amalek. Any other reason would be a Milchemes Rishus.
Rebbe, was this a general
to wipe out these nations? So if you come across territory which is being occupied by Kanani and Chiti and Amori and Prizi or etc. etc., so that is Milchemes Mitzvah. You have to wipe them out. So the king does not need any permission.
Is this a general halacha for all kings of Eretz Israel, or is this at David HaMelech? Because I thought Hashem told David that because of his nature, he needs
all kings. We're going to learn it from Sukkim. So the Mishnah says, "Umoitzi lemilchemes." So the Mishnah is clearly stressing that we're not talking about Milchemes Mitzvah. A Milchemes Rishus, he will take out the army, al pi bezdin shel shivim ve'echod. Now, the truth is, this should not come as news to us. Why should it not come as news to us? Because we've learned this already. In that very opening Mishnah, on the Beis Amud Aleph, where it talks about all the various different cases for which you would require 71. Go back to the beginning of the Masechta. If you have a Gemara in front of you, look at that base Amud Aleph, the very, very first daf. So if you look about halfway down the wide lines, the first word on the line is Godoil. And it says at the end of that line, Ve'ein moitzin lemilchemes harashus elo al pi bezdin shel shivin ve'echod. It's quite clearly, you'd only take out Klal Yisrael to war if it's a milchemes rashus, unless you have the sanction from Bezdin of 71. Now have a look at Rashi there. Rashi's towards the bottom of the Omud. It's on the end of the third wide line. Bermilchemes. Bermilchemes. It says that, B'molchemes HaRashus, Kol milchama kori rishus. All milchama is essentially called the milchemes rishus levad. When Yeshua came to Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael there was being occupied by the seven nations, so that was a Melchemes Mitzvah. But other than that, a standard war where a king wants to go to war with any particular nation, that is a Melchemes Rishus. And the Mishnah is telling us, in order to do so, he has to receive the green light from the Beis Din HaGadol, which would therefore automatically raise the question, so why is our Mishnah teaching it to us once again? Our Mishnah says that he would not take out Klal Yisrael to Milchama unless you have a Beis Din of 71. Well, we've already learned that in that base.
Just a follow-up question to understand. So if one of the nations that the Rav mentioned, just a random nation, is attacking Klal Yisrael,
right,
does that become Milchemes Mitzvah?
No, because it's got to be one of the seven nations. The seven nations of Goyim, but if the nation of Swahili or from the United Kingdom come, then not. But if it's Kanani or Amori, Chiti, Prizi, Yabusi, Girgashi, etc., etc., then there's a mitzvah deraisa to wipe out that particular nation. But if you have another nation which is not one of those seven, it just happens to be that the king would like to conquer their land, then that is not a Milchemes Mitzvah. So, as mentioned, we would need to address the question, why is the Mishnah pointing out this halacha that you need 71 dayanim in the Beis Din to give the green light? Surely we've already learned this. The Gemara will ask the question. So let's look at the Mishnah again. Umoitzi lemilchemes harashus al pi Beis Din shel shivim ve'echod. Then the Mishnah tells us another halacha. Upoireitz lasois loy derech. What does it mean, upoireitz? If a king needs to get from A to B, and in his way is a particular private piece of property, so everybody else would obviously be required to go around the long route. You can't just blaze your way through somebody's back garden because it's a shorter route for you. But a melech may indeed do that. And that's what it means. Upoiret, he can break through the friends. Look at Rashi. Upoiret gedorois acherim. He can, in fact, break other people's fences, la'asos lo derech, in order to give him access, la'sodehu, or la'karmoi, to his field, or his kerem. That is the special privilege of a king. We will not require the king to make the long route around somebody else's field, for example, in order to access his own field. Rather, la locha, he's allowed to break through and make a direct path going absolutely straight through from his field to from the fence field to his own field. So that's what the Mishnah means when it says upoireitz lasois loy derech ve'ein memache biyodei, says the Mishnah. Nobody can make a macha. Nobody can make a macha. Nobody has the right to protest. That is the special royal privilege. Then he says, Derech HaMelech Ein Loi Shiur. This Derech HaMelech that we just mentioned, that he has the right to forge his own way, Ein Loi Shiur, there's no minimum or maximum. If he needs to plow through 10 fields in order to get to his, Mutar Lechatchila. Finally, says the Mishnah, another halacha of royal privilege, V'chol Ha'om Boizazik. When you go to war, we know one of the halachas of war is, there's a concept called shalol. What's shalol? Plunder or booty, which means that you have right to take over the enemy's property. Now, what does that mean, you take over the property? Who actually owns it? Does it become property of the state? Is it first come, first served? Finders, keepers? How does it work? So the Mishnah says, the kolah on boizazim, when they go to war, so then everybody can plunder. However, the noisnin loy, v'hu noitel chelek barosh. The king gets first pickings. If you look at Rashi, the last Rashi on the Mishnah, chelek barosh, as in Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the year. So His chelek comes first. Chelek hayofe. He can choose the best, the most choice piece. Boirer rishain v'noitel mechza. So Rashi tells us two things. Number one, he gets half, and the rest is distributed amongst Klal Yisrael. Not only does he get half, but he can choose which particular half he wants. Again, the royal privilege. So now the Gemara is going to examine the various halachas. We just learned three halachas in the Mishnah. Number one, in order to take Klal Yisrael to Melchemes Rashus, you need 71 dayan on the Beis Din to sanction it. Number two, the king can just forge his path, a direct route, as the expression goes, as the crow flies. He doesn't need to go around the long route, king's privilege. And thirdly, whenever they go to war, then the halacha is the booty, the plunder, is taken by Klal Yisrael. It's given to the king. He chooses the first half, whichever he wants, following which they will then take the rest. Says the Gemara, Tanina Choda Zimna. Haven't we already learned this one occasion? When did we learn this on a previous occasion? This is the Mishnah that we just quoted a moment ago in the Beis Hamidah. Because it says, quote unquote, Ein moitzim l'molchemes orashus elo alpi bezdin shal shivim ve'echot. So this halacha that he needs the green light from the 71-man Beis Din is something that we've learned already. If that's the case, so why is our Mishnah telling us this halacha once again? We've already learned it in the Mishnah and Daf Beis Amud Aleph. So why is the Mishnah and Daf Chof Amud Beis telling us the halacha once again? Says the Gemara, Aidi de Tana kol midi de melech. You're right. But because we're bringing together now all the list, the comprehensive list of halachas pertaining to a melech, so that's why we bring this one as well. In other words, the Mishnah in Daf Beis Amud Aleph, what was the subject there? The subject there was not the halachas of a melech. The subject there was the halachas of a Beis Din. So there we want to group together all the various cases and scenarios in which you would require a 71-man Beis Din. Now, in this second parak, we are collating all the halachas of Melech, one of which happens to be that you need 71 men in the Beis Din. Therefore, even though the halach has been taught already, but we want to include it in this list to make sure that it's a fully comprehensive list. So again, says the Gemara, on the second last narrow line, Aidi the Tana, since the Tana has told us, Kol Mili the Melech, all matters pertaining to the king, therefore, Tana Nami, that's why he tells us also this halacha of Mitzin and Olchemes HaRashus, even though technically speaking, we know it's already from that base, perfectly true. Says the Gemara, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Kol Ha'omur B'Parshas Melech. Now, we need to make a little bit of a historical introduction over here. After Yehoshua ben Nun passed away, there were several hundred years in which Klal Yisrael did not have a melech. That was the tekufa of the shoftim. What's the exact halachic difference between a melech and a shofet is not our discussion today, but a shofet is not a melech. So he may judge Klal Yisrael, but he doesn't function as the melech of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael approach Shmuel Hanavi, and they request of him, could you please appoint a melech over us? And eventually he did, and of course, that was the melech Shaul, and then David HaMelech who followed. Now, this was a very, very peculiar, it was rather strange parasha. Why is it a strange parasha? Because if you look in the parasha, it quite clearly says that Shmuel HaNavi got rather upset, disappointed with Klal Yisrael. The way that they expressed their request is, please could you appoint upon us a king, and that way we will be like all the Goyim. Every non-Jewish nation has a king, why can't we have one also? So Shmuel HaNavi got upset with him. Now, why did he get upset? So Lechairi got upset because of the way that they phrased their request. We want to be like the goyim. Why would you want to be like the goyim? Nonetheless, even though he was upset with them, but he did acquiesce. And he did appoint the king, and that's how Shaul HaMelech came to be a king. Now, why is that strange? It's strange because if you look in the parasha that we read a week and a half ago, which is Parashas Shoftim, the Torah talks about that exactly. The Torah says, and it will be when you want to appoint a king like the goyim, that this is what you have to do. So the Torah seems absolutely to sanction this request to want to have a king like the goyim. So when they actually came forth and they phrased their request in those very words, why on earth did Shmuel HaNavi get upset with them? Oh, you want to be like the goyim? But that's exactly the way the Torah sanctioned it. So that is a very, very famous question. And there are several answers, but that's not our discussion today. So what we need to know for our Gemara is, the bottom line is that Shmuel HaNavi was upset with Klal Yisrael. But having said that, as mentioned, he did comply with their request. Having said that, he then appointed Shaul HaMelech and told Klal Yisrael, this is what will be entailed. So if you want me to appoint a king, that's your prerogative. I may not be happy about it, but I will do so. But this is what you will be expected to do. You need to know the halachas of a king and how you have to mechabed the king and the king's privileges. After all, this is what you've requested. So you've got to take, as it were, the rough with the smooth. That is the historical backdrop. So now the Gemara has a very interesting discussion. When he told Klal Yisrael that if you appoint a king, or if I appoint a king on your behalf, then here come all of the halachas, some of them rather scary sounding. Were they literal lahalacha? Or actually he exaggerated a bit just to shake them up? Why would you want to shake them up? As we said before, because he wasn't best pleased that they requested a melech in the first place. So he says, well, listen, these are the terms and conditions. You pick. So maybe he over-exaggerated. So have a look at the Gemara now. Omar Shmuel. Kol ha'omor b'parshas melech. Everything that's written in the parasha of the melech, what does that mean, the parasha of the melech? Look immediately at Rashi. If you look in the parasha of melech, says Rashi, which parasha is that? B'sefer Shmuel. You look there and you'll see that Shmuel HaMelech told Klal Yisrael some rather frightening things. What would be an example of a frightening thing that he told Klal Yisrael? So Rashi quotes one example. B'neichem u'b'neiseichem yikach, quote unquote. He has the right to take away your sons and your daughters. I don't know, for national service or to serve in the palace, and you get no choice in the matter, says Rashi, u'k'yetze bohem, and other such examples. Now, none of those, certainly that example, is not mentioned in the Torah. So when Shmuel is now seemingly adding this halacha, and he's frightening Klal Yisrael, and he tells him, you know, you want me to appoint a king? No problem. But you have to know that the king has a right to take your sons and your daughters. Really? You still want a king? So look back in the Gemara now. Omar Shmuel, kol ha'omor b'parashas melech. Everything that is written in the parasha of the melech, meaning Shmuel's rather scary sounding list, melech mutar bo. Yes, it's absolutely permissible for the king. Shmuel was not exaggerating whatsoever. Everything he said, he meant what he said. He said what he meant. It was all to be taken literally. Yes, the king is absolutely allowed to, on his own. That's the word I'm looking for, I forgot now. On his own volition, that's the word, on his own volition, he can decide, yes, I'm taking people's sons and daughters for to be a slave or for national service. It's all literal. However, says the Gemara, Rav Omar, that no, Rav disagrees with Shmuel. Rav Omar loy nemra parasha zu. This parasha was never said for any other reason. Elo la ayim aleihem. It was to scare them. Shenema, why is there an Indian of scaring them? Yes, because the nation have to fear the king. And that we really learn from a pasuk in the Torah. Shenema, soim tosim olecho melech. You must place over above you that keyword olecho, which lechayr is a superfluous word. It says soim tosim olecho. Why doesn't it just say soim tosim melech, appoint a king? It doesn't say appoint a king. It says appoint a king over you. So if it says over you, so we assume that to mean we make a drasha from those words. And what is the drasha? Shetehei emoscha olav. That his emo is got to be over you. In other words, the king, you've always got to be in fear or in awe of the king. And therefore, when Shmuel HaNavi was given this list, it was actually an exaggeration. Have a look at Rashi. That's where Rashi learns. Rav Omar, loy nemro parsha de Shmuel, elo la'ayim aleihem. What does ayim mean? Fear. We're going to say this on Rosh Hashanah, for example, in the Masanet Tokef, it says that these days are ki hu oyoim v'noira. Oyoim v'noira. Oyoim means frightening. So he was only saying this to frighten Klal Yisrael, says Rashi, shetehei emas malkom aleihem. So that the fear of the king should be over them. Avol Eloi mutter lasseis. It's not actually permissible to do. What is permissible to do? Only that which is clearly stated in the Torah. That which Shmuel HaNavi now added to the list, the king actually is not allowed to take people's sons and daughters, etc., etc. Well, if they're not allowed to do it, so why is he telling them? The answer is, he was just telling them as such in order to shake them up. What's the purpose of shaking them up? There's halacha, the emo of the king has to be on Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
Well, since Shmuel was upset, maybe he was trying to shake them up to try to change their mind. Okay, you want a king? You want a king? Let me tell you what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a little bit schwer to say that because Bishloimer, if you say that he exaggerated in order to scare them, okay, that's permissible because we know there is a chiyuv that the person has to be scared of the king. But if it was to put them off from wanting a king in the first place, then who said he had a right to exaggerate? Who said there's a mitzvah to put them off?
Yeah, but the point is, if he wanted them to have awe, but all the halachas that he, all the stuff he told them wasn't true, so at the end of the day, they're not going to have the awe. Oh, wait a second. What, you know what I mean? Yeah, the awe goes away.
Shmuel HaNavi said that this is the halacha. The Gemara was just saying, the halacha lemaisa was not true. They didn't know that. As far as they were concerned, whatever Shmuel said was the truth. All I'm saying is, what right does Shmuel have to exaggerate unless he's fulfilling a Torah mandate? There is a Torah mandate to scare the nation of the king, but there's no Torah mandate to put people off wanting a king in the first place. So what right would Shmuel have to exaggerate in order to achieve that? Oh, well, if that's the case, we'd rather not have a king, right? Well,
maybe he thought they should that it was the Torah mandate that they shouldn't have a king. Otherwise, why would he be against them having the king? If the Torah says they should have a king, why am I against it? That's what the Torah says.
Roots him to, as I mentioned before. But at the end of the day, you see that he did acquiesce. They have every right to ask for a king. He didn't like the way that they actually phrased it. That's true. But they have every right to request a king. Except you have to know that you have to have fear of the king. Okay, I'm going to jolly well instill fear of the king into you. Says the Gemara on the third line, Kitanoi. This machloikas Rav Shmuel actually turns out to be the identical machloikas that we have learned elsewhere in Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, because it says in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Oimer, those exact words, Kol ha'omor b'parashas melech, melech mutaboy. Anything that is written in the parash of the melech is absolutely permitted to do. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Loi nemra parashazu, elokadei la'ayim aleim. This parash was only ever stated in order to instill fear over them. Shenema, soim tosim olecho melech, shetehei imasa olecho. So it's word for word. That machloikas Rav Shmuel turns out actually to have been predated. It was in fact a machloikas between Reb Yosi and Reb Yehuda. Okay. Now, V'chein Hoya Reb Yehuda Oymer. Reb Yehuda now added another halacha. Again, this is all the subject of the melech. What exactly is the function of the melech in Klal Yisrael? V'chein Hoya Reb Yehuda Oymer. Gimel mitzvahs. Nitzavu Yisrael b'knisason la'aretz. And you'll see that this will make the whole Shmuel story even more difficult. There are three mitzvahs that Klal Yisrael were instructed to fulfill upon their entering of Eretz Yisrael. What is that? Number one, lahamid lohem melech, to appoint a king. Which obviously, therefore, begs the question, so if it's a mitzvah to appoint a king, so once again, why did Shmuel HaNavi get upset when they requested to appoint a king? It's a mitzvah. So the answer must be, again, without going into the details, he didn't so much object to their request as rather the nusach of their request. He didn't like the way that they asked it, but the fact they asked to appoint a king, yes, absolutely, that's what he mechuyav to do. So that's one thing you have to do. Number two, Lahachris Zaroi Shalamolik. There's a mitzvah upon entering the Klal Yisrael to wipe out all descendants of Amalek. And thirdly, Velivnois Lohem Beis Habechira. Also, there's a mitzvah that this king has to now lead the charges and build the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, look at Rashi. Shalosh mitzvah, says Rashi, an important Rashi. Lahochi nokat shalosh halolu. Why and what is unique about these three mitzvahs? Shehin tluyois zu bezu. They are all actually dependent one on another. It's not just three random, unrelated mitzvahs. These three mitzvahs are all dependent on each other. Why? La'asoison kesidron. They must be done in that particular order. Good mafarish lekamon, as we're going to explain. Firstly, bitchilo melech, v'achareho amolek, v'achareho beis habechira. So there has to be a seder for reasons that we will discuss at a later occasion. But it has to be, you've got to appoint a melech, following which you'll wipe out Amalek. So for some reason, this mitzvah of wiping out Amalek cannot be fulfilled unless you have a melech, which therefore necessarily requires a prior appointment of the melech, number one. Secondly, the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdosh apparently also requires that Amalek be wiped out. So you cannot build a Beis HaMikdosh and then wipe out Amalek. Again, for reasons that we will need to discuss. So therefore, if it's critical that before you build a Beis HaMikdosh, you first wipe out Amalek, and if it's critical for some reason in wiping out Amalek that you have to have a king, well, that obviously leads us to the conclusion that you've got to therefore be mekayim those mitzvahs in that particular order. So first, therefore, you have to appoint a king, following which you wipe out Amalek, following which you build the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, why those mitzvahs are dependent on each other? Why is it so important whilst wiping out Amalek you need a king? Why is it important whilst building a Beis HaMikdosh you wipe out Amalek? That we'll have to see. But says Rashi, Beknisasom la'aretz, when you enter Eretz Yisrael. Now, how do you know that these mitzvahs take effect upon entering Klal Yisrael, upon entering Eretz Yisrael? The answer is, Debekulhu ksiv Yerusha v'yeshiva. We always talk about Yerusha v'yeshiva. What's Yerusha v'yeshiva? Klal Yisrael first taking over the land, and then the yeshiva inhabiting the land. Wherever it says that, then by definition, it's got to be the event of Eretz Yisrael. Where does it say those words? Says Rashi. It says v'yorashto v'yoshavto bo. You will inherit the land and you will inhabit it. And then it says, Va'omrat osima olai melech. And then it says, you'll appoint a king. So you see that the appointment of the king follows immediately inhabiting the land. That's number one. Ba'amolek ksiv V'hoya b'honiach Hashem, says also with regard to Amalek, that it will be when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring you into Eretz Yisrael and the other nations will be wiped out. So again, it's clearly referring to that particular time when they enter Eretz Yisrael. And finally, u'bebinyan beis habechira. What about building the beis hamikdash? K'siv v'avartem es hayardin. It says you will cross the yardin, v'yoshavtem ba'aretz, you will inhabit the land, v'hodar k'siv. And then it says v'hoyo hamokoyim. Then it says, and the place that you will build for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, etc., etc., etc. So you see quite clearly that the Torah makes all of these three mitzvahs contingent on crossing the Yarding, entering Eretz Yisrael, conquering and inhabiting the land, and then you fulfill the mitzvahs. Yes, Rabbi Larry.
Why didn't David HaMelech kill Agag and all the remaining children and sheep? And huh? No, David. Mm-hmm. Shaul screwed up. Shaul messed up. He didn't do it. But now that David's the king, his Melech has an obligation to get rid of Amalek.
Shaul HaMelech did not mess up. Yeah, you're right. He did not kill Agag for reasons that is discussed. Yes, what's the question?
Why didn't David do it?
Why didn't David do what?
Kill Agag after he became king.
I don't remember the history. Maybe Agag eventually died. I don't know. It was too late. Agag already had children.
No, but he should have wiped it. There were remnants of. We know that Haman winds up in the end, right? So there were remnants of Amalek after Shaul died. So why didn't David step in and say, "I have an obligation to get rid of Amalek. I'm getting rid of him."
The Chazal said they had magical koiches, magical koiches, and that's what Chazal said. They had magical koiches, and they managed to reincarnate themselves as animals. So even though Amalek might well have been running around, you wouldn't necessarily have known it, because your local cow in the field could well have been an Amaleki. So it could be that's the reason they didn't know who Amalek was. It's alleged, or at least quoted, that the Chasam Sofer killed an Amaleki. There is a legend that says
you're saying David HaMelech did not know who Amalek was at that point. That's why he didn't.
I don't know. I'm guessing. I don't know.
But that would be his obligation, right?
Yeah, sure. It's everybody's obligation.
No, but it says HaMelech. It says specifically, first you appoint a king, then he's got to get in, they got to get rid.
It says you have to have a king in Klal Yisrael.
And then the next thing Rashi says is you got to get rid of HaMelech once you have a king, right?
But not that the king has to be the one to kill. The Rambam clearly says that if you bump into an Amaleki in the street, you have to kill him. The Rambam clearly passed on that. It's conditional having a Melech in Klal Yisrael, but the Melech doesn't have to be the one to kill. Okay, we have to hold it over here. As mentioned, I will not be able to give Shia tomorrow morning. With regard to Thursday, please check your emails. We'll see what will happen there.
Are you familiar with the voice? Are you familiar with the gematria of Amalek is equal to Suffolk?
Yes, 240.
So maybe that's what it's about also.
Okay, Hatzlacha tonight.
I know you love that Hasidic.